Hi there. Welcome to the New Life Live podcast. Steve here. And since 1988, New Life has been transforming lives one life at a time. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's most hard, difficult places. One way we do this is through the live program that we share with our listeners here on this podcast. Now, you'll get to listen to callers bringing us their challenges, and our panel of counselors and psychologists provide insight, which you will learn from too.
Well, hello there. It's Becky Brown with Dr. Jill Hubbard and JJ West, and we are taking your calls today, as we always do, and we're so grateful to be here. You know, we have heard so many stories about couples who are struggling in their marriage, and especially in the area where they've gotten some terrible advice. For example, have you ever heard of a counselor or even a pastor saying that it's okay to use pornography in your marriage because it could spice up your sex life? I mean, mm-hmm. It actually is the worst possible example of advice that you can give. But yet we hear about it all the time. But what actually happens when a couple is instructed to do this and maybe even uses pornography? JJ or Jill, how does this poison the marriage? I know it sounds like an obvious question or answer maybe, but it's been told to so many couples. What are they actually doing when this occurs?
Well, I'll jump in.
Sure.
They're doing a couple of things that are really, really problematic. It starts with just understanding the root word of pornography. It's a description, it's a depiction of prostitution. That's the that's the actual etymology of the word. So you're engaging in something that is depicting the buying and selling of sex and the buying and selling of people. That's that is absolutely against God's word and against his design. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that it's introducing another person into the marriage bed. Whether in picture form or actual form, anytime you introduce another person into the relationship, it diminishes or starts to deteriorate the marriage relationship. And there's all kinds of things that go on in terms of comparison, especially for the wife, because it's usually, it's not always, but it's usually the pornography is other images of women, because the man is the one who is most impacted by the pornographic images. And so there, for the wife, typically, there's all kinds of comparisons that start to happen. And she starts to wonder, are you more attracted to this image or this person than you are to me? And really what needs to happen in these cases, it's not, oh, hey, we need to go look at porn or do something else to spice up our sex life. What we really need to do is learn to pursue authentic connection. And that's going to spice up your sex life, when you have authentic connection with someone, not when you bring in a third party in either picture form or actual form.
That's so true.
Right, because it's not about intimacy. Then the focus is purely on the performance of the sexual act.
Right.
And what you're doing is you're habituating to needing an outside aid to perform, right? And to be close. And so that the focus completely shifts off of what it was intended to be. And it's that emotional connection. Right. And I always say we women, but it's true about men, too. Lovemaking starts with that emotional connection.
Yeah, we talk about intimacy, our intimacy in marriage workshop. Intimacy is into me. See, it is that that very connected part of the marriage. And when you think about this concept of outsiders, that doesn't even make sense. But yet, that's what we're told, you know, in so many terrible situations. You'll never hear that here. We won't ever tell you that because we have seen the damage that it has done to so many folks. But you know what? There's hope for healing and restoration. You know, our Intimacy and Marriage Workshop is one of those places that you can get healing. We've got coaches, counselors, help you to get connected with your spouse in a healthy and meaningful way that can make all the difference in the world. We're going to go to our calls right after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Back, you know, I was just talking about the intimacy and marriage workshop. You know, we have workshops for Every Man's Battle, Restore, which is helping women dealing with betrayal. We have emotional freedom. You know, we want you to have a free and full life. That's what God wants for you, and we want to help you through those struggles. If you are interested in any of those, you can go to newlife.com, click on the events tab, and you'll see all. There's so much information. You can always call us, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Right now, we're going to go to the calls, and we are going to talk with Paula, who's calling us from Sacramento, listens on KFIA. Hi, Paula. How can we help you today?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm a big supporter of New Life. I thank you for being there. We have a granddaughter who has been diagnosed by those that know her closely that she has borderline personality disorder. Mm-hmm. And my daughter tells me that, you know, they really cannot diagnose her until she's 21 to 25. So she's on medications for bipolar, anxiety, mood. But, and I'm just really learning about what this all means, but
so
everywhere
Paula,
she goes.
Paula,
yes.
First of all, how old is your granddaughter? And did you say she was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder or bipolar?
Borderline.
Okay.
They, from what they've told
And she's
my
17.
Daughter,
but she's on bipolar meds. Okay.
Right. But, you know, with this, she tends to stir up drama wherever she goes. And it's gotten to the point where it's, well, for a long time, it's been highly affecting the whole family, because she is one of seven children in the family.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And where is she in the lineup of seven kids?
She's number two.
Okay.
So, Paula, what's your question? Mm-hmm. We hear that it's a lot of difficulty.
Yeah, it's very, it's overwhelming to everyone.
Yeah.
What is the best avenue for helping her and her family with this disorder? Because I'm reading a book called When Your Daughter Has BPD, and my daughter has read it, and I think this seems really good for helping to manage it, to manage what happens in the family that causes so much fear, chaos, disorder. It has caused in the past with this child's behavior to just monopolize everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. JJ or Jill, when you answer Paula, will you explain what is borderline personality disorder, just so that everybody knows what we're talking about?
Okay. Well, borderline personality is someone who is emotionally labile and unstable, creates a lot of chaos in relationships. They tend to idealize and then they devalue. So it's a lot of hot and cold. They tend to leave a path of destruction, of broken relationships, kind of all or nothing. They are highly attention seeking. But one thing that's really important to remember is that actually their brains feel things much more intensely. And so they get very upset when you don't jump on the bandwagon of their intensity. And they're very demanding, right? Often seen as histrionic, often seen as shallow. And so they're definitely problematic. Now, that being said, at her age, and your daughter's right, she can't fully be diagnosed until she's a little bit older, but you're seeing some of the symptoms. Now, I know that there's a lot of people out there that would say that their daughter of this age is also BPD, right? Because this is also a very intense time for girls, and you will see a lot of acting out behavior and a lot of this emotionality that then eventually does die down as they get into their 20s and their brain becomes fully online and they mature. But not all of them. So one of the treatments that's best for this, that helps people make good decisions, is DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy. So to get in with a therapist that is trained in this can help set some structure and help your granddaughter to buy in to making some better decisions for herself. All of that being said, I would also look at, with seven kids, you know, she is the one that's finding a way to get the attention, right? Mm-hmm. So there's something to look at in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, JJ, do you have anything you want to add?
So a couple things. Paula, do you live nearby? Do they live with you? How involved are you with the family?
I want to be very involved, but I'm really far away. There's another set of grandparents that live really close by, and they've been helping significantly. Mm-hmm. But recently, she acted out and ran away, and attended school drunk, and so
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a problem, I just want to say one thing, is that because of this, and this has been going on for quite a while, people are kind of almost wanting to back away because, you were afraid.
There's so much drama around her acting out behavior.
Yeah, she's not reasonable. Like, everything you said just nailed it on the head. She was here with us, and a minor thing that where I asked her why something, she just totally became, I knew I shouldn't come, and just was really dramatic.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's how they control and get people to shut down. Mm-hmm.
Right, right. So a couple of things, Paula, that I think you can, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then it causes her siblings to try to placate her, to be close to her.
Yeah.
But as soon as they set a boundary, then she threatens.
Right.
You know, as soon as they say, I have to tell mom.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Sure. Absolutely. So a couple of things that I think you can do. Obviously, it's a little bit more challenging because you're further away. I love the fact that you're reading the book that your daughter asked you to read. I think you learning as much as you can about the diagnosis is going to be helpful. Mm-hmm. I think asking your daughter specifically, how can I be support to you? How can I help you? What are the things that you need? Do you need a weekend where the rest of the grandkids can come and just spend time with, camp grandma and grandpa, so that you've got some one-on-one time with the daughter who is diagnosed with these disorders? Would that be helpful? But let her share with you what she needs. And then I think it would be important for the family as a whole Jill talked about, going to a DBT therapist. I think that's important for this granddaughter. But I think it would also be helpful for her parents, your daughter, and if she's married, her husband, as well as possibly you virtually, to meet with the DBT therapist to say, what are some things that we need to do to help her function well? But then also for the rest of the family, there needs to also be some ongoing family therapy. How do we best function as a family in setting these boundaries, knowing that we're going to get tremendous pushback from her? Because her younger siblings are going to have a really hard time trying to understand what is going on. They just see their older sister misbehaving and treating them poorly, and they may be internalizing those messages.
Right. Well, Paula,
You have to consider that people with borderline are highly impulsive, and so they do a lot of acting out, like with drugs and alcohol, with sex, with eating. So there's multiple problems here at hand that have to be addressed.
We will send you, we'll send you, Paula, Understanding and Loving a Person with Bipolar or Borderline Personality Disorder, which I think will give you some insight. But I also love what you said, Jill, earlier about the fact that she's 17, and so while this may not be the diagnosis for her, it can be helpful to keep that in mind. Just, there's a lot going on there, but we'll be praying for her and for the family. We're glad you called. That's a good grandma call, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to talk with Curtis, who's calling us from I don't know how to say that, but it's in New York, and it's SiriusXM is how you listen, Curtis. I'm so glad you called. How can we help you today?
Yeah, I just want to have a quick question about, I listen to you guys a lot, and you talk about kids and stuff like that. I'm a single parent of two kids. One is 10 and one is 7. My son, who's 10 years old, has autism, and his mother is battled with addiction for a long time. She's been sober for years. But, of course, she's not able to be unsupervised around the children. She has nowhere to see the kids, so she comes to my apartment. And when she comes to my apartment, it's a toxic environment, not only for me, but for the children. So I'm trying to figure out how to explain to my kids, because they're blaming me that I keep taking their mother away from them.
That is hard. Just for clarification, Curtis, is your son that has autism, is he verbal? Is he able to connect?
He is verbal. He doesn't have that side of the autism. It's more of an intellectual properties and sensory issues.
Okay. So there's a lot of drama. Your 7-year-old is a girl?
Yes.
Okay. So they're having to deal with a lot of disruption in their lives with their mom. Is mom behaving when she comes in? She's not? Is that what you're saying the problem is?
She does not. It's like she blames me for everything that happened in her life. Like I heard a program that you had on a couple weeks ago where you were talking about how you do things to try to help the person that's addicted get off drugs. I did all those things that you can imagine, whether it was going into a crack house, pulling her out of a crack house, whatever. You know, I did what I thought I was wrong. And now I have two children that have no idea what I'm trying to keep them away from.
Yeah. Gosh. JJ, how can we help Curtis?
One question first. Curtis, why is the supervised visitation at your house and not, say, through the court system or through, say, a guardian ad litem, something along those lines?
Well, it was for 2 years when my son has an aid worker that comes in every night. When the aid worker that I had would do it. I don't have that aid worker anymore, and the current aid worker doesn't want to deal with the mom's nonsense because it's, he tries to pull everybody into this, I'm the victim, and Curtis is the bad one.
So nobody
that she hung around with would even be approved by CPS for visits.
But they have visitation centers where they can also go. But so she doesn't really come to visit the children. She comes to plead her case.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah.
And yet the children, I mean, kids desire to know both their parents.
Sure.
And even a bad parent, a kid still wants connection with, right? And kids will try to keep their parent good so that they can have something of them. So it's understandable that your kids are very confused and at these ages aren't fully going to understand the ways in which you're trying to protect them. And that's a very hard position for you to be in.
We'll go back to JJ after the break, Curtis. I'm just grateful that you are their dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is so difficult when we're in relationship with people who have struggled with addiction. Even when they're sober, the struggle may still be present if they haven't completed or continued their recovery work. We are glad that we're here for you, and we'll give you some insight on the way back. You know, it's always something, but it's so important to keep looking for a different way that can make it better, because there is always hope. We'll be back after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are glad that you called. And I just, you know, we're in the middle of this discussion with Curtis. And, you know, I want to say again, Curtis, you are a great dad for carrying the burden that you have carried. But, JJ, you had asked them the question about
JJ.
The situation.
I interrupted you. I'm
so
sorry.
What would you encourage for Curtis to do?
Yeah. So, Curtis, first thing is I would go back to the courts, go back to whichever caseworker was assigned to you, explain the situation, and explain that you need a different venue for your ex-wife to have visitation with your children because the current venue is simply not working. It's not fair for you to have to be the referee and be put on trial every single time she has visitation with the kids. So I would encourage you to look for, you know, find out what are the different options, what are the other venues, and to have someone besides you provide the supervision so that she can't rope you into or try to rope you into this, you know, oh, don't you feel bad for me? I'm the victim. Look what your dad did. Why won't he let me come home? Why won't he let me see you more? It's not, you didn't do any of those things. She made choices, and these are the consequences of those choices that the court has enforced.
Well, and the court can assign a child advocate to your case that, you know, is looking out for the best interests of the children and can mediate those things.
And then the other thing I would just add, Curtis, is right now the children are young. As they get older, unless mom's behavior changes dramatically, they're going to see the truth of how she behaves. Even though she's giving them all kinds of lines
I
now.
I keep telling myself that too, but
I know.
Yeah,
and
I can't imagine the pain that you're going through and having to have your children be told these lies and believe these lies about you. But if you continue on the path you're on and she continues on the path she's on, they will get to a place where they see the truth because it won't just be what she says. They'll be able to see what she's doing and not doing.
And Curtis, even if she were healthier and the kids were going back and forth between households, whenever kids come back from the other household, there is always a transition and a feeling of disconnection from the parent that's most involved. And so you have to tolerate that because kids struggle. They feel like they're being disloyal. They have to switch allegiances. It's hard for them. And so kids always act up a bit after a visitation of any sort, even when it's the best case scenario. The other thing I would recommend for you is to resist you doing what she does and trying your case and defending, right? Mm-hmm. I would try to draw the kids' feelings out. How does it feel when mom says that to you? Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? What do you know to be true about when you and I are together, right? Get them talking and thinking about it, right?
Yeah.
Instead of you telling them what to think or how to feel. It makes you, you know, and validate. It makes you sad that you can't see your mom more.
Yeah.
And I understand
Curtis, we will send you a copy of How We Love Our Kids. And I think that it would be great, even for a time period, to have a third party present when mom comes to visit.
Oh, that's
even
a good
if
idea.
It is a family member that she accepts. If you can't get the court to have a supervisor with you, it will turn down the temperature of mom's reactions when she's over because it won't just be you, her, and the kids. It will be a third party who, you know, neutral, not trying to catch her in anything, but just it can sometimes just change everything. And we'll be praying for your family. We're going to send you a copy of that. How We Love Our Kids can help you even as you're continuing to, you know, parent them. I think that's the challenge of all parents is how do we parent even in the worst situations? But we're glad you called. We're going to go back to the calls and we're going to talk with Barbie, who's calling us from Seattle. And she listens from her mother. I don't know what that means, Barbie, but I'm sure you're going to explain.
Right. My mom listens to you, and, you know, I've been asking her for advice, and so she's like, sure, they have calls today. You should call in.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. So how can we help you, Barbie, our newest listener? So
yes. I have a 16-year-old son who has done well. His freshman year, he got all A's and B's and was doing well in school. And then towards the end of first semester of this second year, his sophomore year, he was absent quite a bit due to illness and then a trip. And so his grades kind of plummeted. And then like a week later, his girlfriend of a year and a half dumped him. Mm. And his grades have just gone down the toilet.
Yeah.
And no matter what I do, he's kind of refusing. And he wants me to quit nagging him and quit asking him about how he's doing. And he said, you know, my consequence is that I'm going to fail. So, you know, just leave me alone. So I don't want him to fail, but I'm not sure where I can help him. He is in therapy because he had talked about suicide. And so, you know, I'm continuing to have him in therapy. But do I just let him fail?
Okay. Well, you can hear the music. Barbie, that usually means we're going to go to a break. I know you don't listen, but now you do. So I'm just telling you, we're going to go to a break. I do have one question. Is dad in the picture at all?
We've been divorced for 7 years, and that was hugely impactful, especially on my son.
Okay. And does he have contact with his dad at all?
He does occasionally, but his dad is emotionally abusive, and so it's not a healthy relationship at all.
Okay. That all fits in with all of this. Yeah. Well, we're glad you called, Barbie. Thanks to your mom. And we'll be back after this break to answer your question.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now, let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We're glad you called, Barbie, and I think we can give you some help. JJ or Jill, who wants to start?
Well, Barbie, I was thinking about your son. I'm so glad that he's in therapy. And he's had a girlfriend for a year and a half at his age. That's pretty significant. That's a long time. And so the feelings of loss that are so huge can cause kids to think, you know, suicidal thoughts, especially at their young age. A lot of times, though, that issue with the girlfriend and the loss is the layer that's on top of the earlier loss in life, which is perhaps around the divorce and the loss of dad not being there. And so whenever we have subsequent losses, it stirs up previous losses. So I hope that the therapist is looking at that what was it like for him as a little boy to go through his family breaking up and now the girlfriend not wanting him, or however that came about, is feeling like, again, that rejection and abandonment. And that's why, you know, it's more complicated and feels intense. It sounds like we were wondering about with the grades. Here he is, a previously good student, and then started to struggle. And then with this loss, is this part of the hopelessness that he's feeling where he previously cared about his grades and now he no longer does?
Probably.
Okay. Well, and him saying, this is my consequence, is that like him accepting responsibility or just not caring?
I think maybe a little bit of both.
Okay.
He just has kind of given up, but but, you know, makes attempts to, you know, bring his grade under check, and then just not wanting to do it again.
He gets overwhelmed, and the emotions that are going on with the loss, I think, overshadow his ability to be productive. Right.
Yes.
That's disabled. So I think it's important to ask him how you ask him how he's doing, but to ask him how mm-hmm. you can best support him during this time, that you realize it's a difficult time. You've given him therapy. You want to come alongside him. And what is he aware of what he needs to move forward?
Well, and I'm thinking, Barbie, go ahead and answer Jill's question. I'm curious what your answer is going to be, because I have another one.
Oh, I do ask him those questions, you know, mm-hmm. what can I do to help you? And, you know, very rarely he'll take me up on him because I'm a teacher and I can help him.
Yeah.
And I actually had previously homeschooled him. So I think maybe some of that plays into it, that he doesn't want me to help him. But then I suggest other ways, other people that could help him, like go to the library with a friend. Like I'm doing my best.
And then right. sometimes Barbie, there's too many suggestions. And sorry, mm-hmm. Becky, can I say one more thing?
Yes.
It's important to make a distinction when somebody is depressed. What do they need to do for themselves, and what are they incapable of doing? And sometimes we step in and do what they're incapable of doing, right, to offer them that support, but then we're hands off with the things that they need to do for themselves. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, yes, early on, we let our kids fail, because they learn from that. And as they get older, the stakes are bigger. So better to fail at this age than later in life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Barbie, what I was going to say is that you are overwhelmed with all of this. And so when you ask the question, do I nag him? I would encourage you to get the support that you need, but also to create another line of conversation with him, so that it is not always about the grades and not about how he can do better, because there it'll open up another avenue for you guys to connect. And I think, you know, that could help. But JJ, I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, a couple of things. One is that he is partially right in that there is a natural consequence mm-hmm. to him not doing what he needs to do in school, which is that he will fail. And mm-hmm. that can be enough of a motivation to turn things around for him. Maybe not. But even if he does, even if he fails sophomore year and has to repeat either the whole year or some of the classes, that doesn't mean that his life is over. It may be that that's exactly what he needs to do in order to see that I can't put my life on hold. So there's some truth in what he's saying, that there is this kind of natural consequence that takes place that you don't have to enforce. And I would say, make sure that you also don't try to rescue him from that natural consequence. Let the natural consequence play out. But of course, that's going to be really challenging, because first of all, no parent wants to see their child fail, right? We all want our children to succeed and beyond succeed. We want them to do very well. As a teacher, I can't imagine the pressure that might be on you to make sure that your son does well in school. But I think, you know, even saying that, to be able to say it's okay for him to fail. I don't want him to fail. I'm sure he doesn't want to fail. But it's okay for him to fail if the end goal is that it allows him to deal with these significant losses in his life and to deal with some of the emotional and psychological issues mm-hmm. that are in play. Far better for him to be able to do some good work in healing so he's no longer struggling with suicidal ideation than to pass 10th grade.
Right.
Well,
right,
and totally. I think being a teacher, you know that you can utilize things in the school system that takes you out of the role of teacher with him, like going and meeting with his high school counselor. Sometimes they can be mm-hmm. great resources. They can add skills classes. They don't want kids to fail. And so they will add things and move things around to accommodate much better at this stage of life than when they get to the next level of education. So to utilize that you can say, we're going to go talk to your school counselor. That's fine if you want this consequence, but we're going to go talk and see to, you know, keep you on track as best we can. And that's something that you can, you know, do with him. And sometimes mm-hmm. you just have to take them and go.
Yes, I've talked to her, and she's called him in a couple of times, and he's still, he says, I'll do that, but then it doesn't happen.
Right. Yep.
So as far as working with his classes.
Mm-hmm.
Barbie, do you feel like we've given you some direction that's helpful, or is there something else that we might need to address?
Could you grade us as the teacher?
No,
I'm not looking for that. I'm teasing. I really do want to help you. We're going to send you.
Go ahead, Barbie.
Oh, I was just going to say, I really appreciate it because I don't think that I've been thinking this is about me at all, but it's true. I am overwhelmed, mm-hmm. and to get the support mm-hmm. that I need is probably mm-hmm. a good idea. And mm-hmm. he has told me a couple of times, you know, all we talk about is school, and I miss just you and me hanging out. So
yes.
That is a good... To have something else besides school with him, that's a really mm-hmm. good reminder and right. suggestion. So thank you. And it was good to hear, too, that his life won't be over if he
yeah.
does flunk a class or two or whatever. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that as well.
We are going to send you.
I know my
we're
kid
gonna
is, has flunked all kinds of
go
classes.
Go ahead, Jill.
I said I really understand because I have a kid who's had to experience that. Just saying.
There you go.
It's not the end of the
world. Barbie, we're going to send you a copy of How We Love Our Kids, which I also think can help you as you connect with him. And you know, one of the things that we talk about here all the time is how to describe how you feel inside. And that book, as well as How We Love, gives you that list of soul words that can help mm-hmm. you describe. You know, it's not just anxiety. It could be something else. It could be, you know, so it just is a very good tool as you navigate these waters. And if you need anything, you can call us with more, and we'll be glad to stay in touch with you, Barbie. You know, right now, one of the reasons why we can stay in touch is because we have great donors who help us do everything that we do. We couldn't do it without the support of our Club New Life family, as well as our donors who this month they started a matching gift campaign, and it has a seed of $325,000. Every dollar that you give during this campaign will be doubled, and it'll make a difference in someone's life. We have a testimony from a man who went to Every Man's Battle that said this was a powerful workshop. It brought new perspective to the causes and triggers for sexual addiction. And during this workshop, I was able to learn to forgive my dad for his attempted suicide when I was 15. That changed my life from that point forward. I was also able to forgive my mother for her years and years of prescription drug addiction that led to her early death. I now need to ask forgiveness from my wife for all the pain and grief my addiction and behaviors have caused her. Thank you, New Life. That's what we're here for, folks. We want to help you have a new life, and it is possible. Through your gifts, through God's grace, we've got counselors across the country, coaches, we've got our workshops. If you want to give and be part of this matching gift campaign, call us, 1-800-NEW-LIFE, or go to newlife.com.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. I want to say hello to all of our podcast listeners because I know that you are there because we hear from you. We also have people who listen on the app, listen on the internet. They can tell Alexa to listen to New Life Live. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that we can help you, and we're here for it, and we're glad that you are there. We also have some great faithful radio listeners, and you know, we've been around for 35 years helping people, and we want to continue to do that. Right now, we're going to go to the calls, and we're going to talk with Susie, who's calling us from Louisville and listens on SiriusXM. That's another way that people can listen. Hi, Susie. How can we help you today?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I listened earlier to a father was talking about a son who was catching him doing masturbation, and I'm a 67-year-old woman who was
abused, was molested when I was 5 or 6. Continued touching with cousins, female cousins, and then with a neighborhood friend, and then when I got to be 14, I fell into a relationship with a woman, a lesbian relationship that took me 10 years to extradite myself from. I'm married, I have grandchildren, but these are, the lesbian, and that everybody knows about that, but nobody knows about what happened before, after the molestation, and then before that. So, and it is a guilty thing. I know I'm forgiven. I understand that part of it, but it's still, you know, it's still something that comes up in my, you know, in my mind's eye, you know, from time to time. And how do you do that? How do you deal with that? How do you let that stuff go? Because the Lord tells us not to do that. Tells us not to get involved in sexual sin. But at that time, I was way too young to understand what it was.
Well, absolutely.
Too young to understand how to... It's so hard to find a place to put that now.
Oh. Yeah. So, well, Susie, Well, I'm so glad you called. I can hear your heart breaking, and I love that you have done the work, but it is hard. JJ, let's start with you. How can she accept that forgiveness that she has been offered and live in that freedom?
There's a couple things that I'm going to recommend. One, I'm going to recommend the book that Jill recommended earlier, even though we don't carry it. The Wounded Heart by Dan Allender is a wonderful resource for adults dealing with the impact of childhood sexual abuse. So I want to recommend that you get that book and the workbook to help you walk through this process, as well as if you're not already working with a therapist, to work with a therapist to help you, especially it's not just the understanding that I am forgiven for my sin, but also being able to offer the grace and mercy to yourself that you were a child, you didn't fully understand all that was going on, and oh, by the way, your body responded, your body was designed to respond sexually to sexual touch, and didn't know that, oh, I'm a child and this is abusive. You had no way of understanding all of that. And so what happens anytime a child is abused sexually, it awakens sexuality for them in way before you're ready for it, way before you're mature enough to understand it. And so what happens a lot of times is because I haven't developed emotionally and relationally, I tend to then sexualize all of my emotions because I don't have a category for it. So when I experience abuse, whether it's exposure or it's actual molestation like you experience, a lot of my emotions get confused with sexuality. And so I start to wonder, like, why am I always feeling this sexual desire? What's wrong with me? And so being able to work with a good therapist and going through a book like The Wounded Heart will help you to identify the fact that your body was designed to respond sexually. It's just that that was taken advantage of by people in your life, whether cousins or neighbors or aunts or uncles or whomever was involved in that process. And even your response of sexual play that you began to engage in after being abused yourself, all of that is still part of that process of trying to comprehend, trying to make sense of what's going on. And at 5 or 6 years old, there's no way that you could have made sense of all of that, especially if you didn't have good, loving parents who would come alongside you and help you try to make sense of what happened to you.
That's right. Jill, what would you add?
And there really is that training up a child in the way he should go or she should go. Because you were being trained into this, right? Your innocence was taken from you. And so you were being trained that this is what we do when we connect with people. So this is how you, like, I love what you said, JJ, about the sexualization, because this is how you learn to connect. And I think it's really important at this age now, Susie, to develop a sense of compassion for yourself at these different ages, for the 5 mm-hmm. or 6-year-old, for the younger you, for the 14-year-old that got ensnared in this relationship. You mm-hmm. were trying to find ways to connect and to be okay and to feel good. And so if you're being trained to go in this direction, of course you're going to go in that direction. And so, again, but like JJ said, you lacked the maturity to know and to see it otherwise. And then this is where people feel like their bodies betray them because, mm-hmm. again, our body gets stimulated even when it's not in the right context.
And so in this present mm-hmm. day, though, what she's asking is how do I find that relief from that sorrow?
So, well, JJ talked about getting in with a counselor, going through the book, The Wounded Heart will help a lot. Develop, and I'm talking about developing a sense of compassion, like really caring about what your younger self went through so that it's not just an intellectual, I forgive myself, right? But it's like, wow, that must have been so hard for me at that younger age. Right? And really understanding and grieving with those younger parts of you that nobody was around to redirect you in a healthy way. And that's really a sad thing.
I was always the worst. I always acted like I was fine.
Yes, mm-hmm. but you weren't.
But nobody knew I was exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And how sad. So you had no one. So now you are the person who can come alongside those younger parts of you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Susie, yeah. We will get you connected with a therapist in your area that can help you process this and get some freedom. Maybe even later in this year, we're going to be doing our emotional freedom workshop. That could be helpful. And I think I'm going to send you a copy of Healing is a Choice because it also can help you in this process. You know, living in the grace that God has given us is hard sometimes because our memories, because of our own sense of guilt. But yet it is the gift that we have for each and every day. And Susie, you've had this family and you've had many years of really good things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's
redemption,
so hard because,
really.
Yeah, exactly. And what happens is in the back of our minds, it can just drain us. And so we want to encourage you in that, you know, if you've heard anything today that, tugs at your heart and you need help, you can call us. We've got all kinds of resources for you because we want you to live in that freedom and in that new life. There is hope and it is always possible. We see it every day. We hear testimonies and we celebrate that in so many ways. Thank you, JJ. And thank you, Jill, for all your wisdom.
Thanks,
thank you,
Becky.
Listeners. And if you need any help, you can call us 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Or go to newlife.com. There's so many things there. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.